Welcome to the Property Lovers Podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Grubisher. This podcast series is all about giving you a competitive edge in your property journey. We'll be discussing little known strategies, tools, and information to help you add value and create wealth through property. Now, obviously, we don't know you or your unique position, so this is not financial or investment advice. It is information of a general nature, and you should always seek professional advice as to your situation before you ever invest in anything. But if you want to play a bigger game in property and want to use property as your vehicle to create wealth and, more importantly, freedom, then you're in the right place. Let's do this. Let's get started. In this podcast episode, we're going to look at some creative ways that you're able to leverage a down property market. So we know that we have rising rates. In fact, our treasurer has said that rates were always expected to rise and they're expected to bite. So there's going to be several more rate rises this year, and the Reserve Bank expects inflation to peak at 7%. So it's going to get worse before it gets better, the treasurer said. That doesn't mean that we're all going to hell in a handbasket. It just means that some more doors may have opened for you as a property lover, as a buyer, and as a seller. But there's just a situation where you may not know what you don't know. So there are some legal ways that you can structure deals. This isn't right for everyone, and you have to look at it case by case, deal by deal. But there are ways that you can buy time in a market like this as a buyer and as a seller, because what happens when prices change or drop in this case, and everybody is predicting that the property market is going to fall? The general consensus on average is by 20%. When and how that will happen and the way in which it will play out is unknown, but some areas will do better than others. And we've talked in other podcasts about it being a market where you buy the best you can possibly buy. So it really lets buyers into the market, and they can aim high, they can pitch and punch above their weight at a whole different level. So blue ribbon properties are always the best to aim for. And a lot of us got priced out of the last market when it went up so quickly. So we were buying regional, or if we really wanted a house, we were buying an apartment. If we wanted a two-bedder, we were settling for a studio. Now, in a buyer's market, you're a bit more spoiled for choice. So first thing is, bat above your weight and try and buy something that is a stretch goal for you. Now, it is going to be harder. Everything is a balancing act. So it's not always the case that that something's totally good. There'll always be, people always say in a hot market, oh, it's so hard, I can't buy, everything's so expensive. And then when the market falls, speculators and people who wanted to make money say, well, there's no point being in the market now because you can't make money and it's crashing and burning. The other thing that happens in a down market is sellers don't necessarily sell. So just because the market is falling doesn't mean that sellers will just pile in and that you'll have the luxury of choice. Often, if people don't have to sell, they won't in a down market. They'll hold out. Motivated sellers will definitely sell and meet the market, which means, yes, you can get a bargain deal, but you may have to look a bit harder because the listings will be lower and not every seller is going to pile into the market. The other thing that will happen is it's a great leveler when the market falls, and that means that it'll be harder to get a loan because interest rates are higher. And banks check your serviceability, in other words, your ability to pay the interest and make the repayments on the loan, they assess it at a higher amount. So lenders actually have an algorithm where they have to add a few percentage points above the official Reserve Bank rate to check if you qualify at that level and if you can make those repayments. And it's going to get harder because obviously we've got very high inflation and wages are somewhat capped. Yes, we've had wage rises and we've got pretty good employment figures. In fact, we haven't had this much employment since 48 years. So things are looking good there, but it does mean that we're having to spend a lot more because the price of groceries, the price of fuel, the war in Ukraine, everything has conspired to make it more expensive just to do what you always did. So a trip to Woolies is going to cost more. I was at the petrol pump the other day and I was flabbergasted. I don't normally notice that sort of thing, but my cost of filling up my tank of petrol is definitely nearly double what it was just a few months ago. And people start to notice those sorts of things and that will bite. And the other thing is, if we've got debt, and a lot of people have a lot of mortgage debt because it was easy to get a loan, house prices were high, they borrowed a lot of money, those repayments on that loan are going to be higher. In fact, for $1 million loan, with banks passing on rate rises, we've already seen our repayments go up $647. If you own a $500,000 loan, it's already an extra $330 a month. And that's just going to get more and more as rates get higher. So it is going to have an impact on people. And what that means is that when banks factor that into what they call their HEMS, household expenditure measure, which they have to assess you on, it means you're going to have less disposable income. And the higher rate they assess you on, so they're not going to check if you can afford rates at 4% or 5%. They'll be checking if you can afford it at 6 and 7%. And if you can't, you won't qualify. Doesn't mean it's all over, though. It means that techniques and legal strategies that people have been buying properties on for years, and I mean decades, last century even, are now back in favor. So let's have a look at a few of those so you know what's possible. One is vendor finance. So vendor finance means that the seller has some money left in the deal. So it's the seller helping you finance your way into a property. So this is great for people wanting to get on the property ladder or buy a property, but they can't quite afford it. Maybe they don't have the deposit or they don't qualify for the loan. So vendor finance means, let's just say I want to buy a place for $1 million and I don't have $1 million, but I can qualify for a loan for, say, $800,000. Vendor finance means that I can buy the property from the owner and they can help finance me into the property. So the bank will lend me whatever I qualify for. I'll put in my deposit or whatever I can. And then the balance of the purchase price, if I can raise $800,000, but there's another $200,000 owing, the seller can have a second mortgage over the property for that amount. This works well with downsizers in a market like this market. They don't have to sell, but maybe they want to sell because remember, it cuts both ways. Let's say that I don't want to sell in this market as a seller because I don't want to make a loss and I want to maximize my sale price. But if I wait for the market to come back and I want to buy somewhere else, I'm going to pay a premium for the place that I'm moving to. So if I can take a loss or lose a little bit in this market by selling, but still secure my next place in a low market, that's a good outcome for me as a seller. But what if I could get the price that I wanted, just not all the money now, but it didn't matter because I didn't need the money. So say I'm a downsizer, I'm going into a, from a four-bedroom house into a two-bedroom apartment. I don't need the $1 million. I just need $800,000. And if I'm retiring, I don't need the access to the money now, but it would be great if the money could earn an income for me. So what I might do is let you buy it from me for a contract price of $1 million, but I'll fund $200,000 of that, and you can pay me interest on that as well. So that's how vendor finance works, and it's good for both buyers and sellers in a market like this. Another strategy you can use is buying a property on an option. So an option is an agreement where you have, as a buyer, maybe the right to buy the property, but not the obligation. For a seller, it locks in a price at some time in the future. Worst case scenario, the buyer doesn't go ahead and you still got the property, or the buyer does go ahead and you're charging a premium for the property, because a buyer will usually pay more because of the time value of money. So let's look at an example. Let's say that a property may be worth $900,000, $850,000 in this market. I might offer to buy it on an option for $1 million, and the option agreement allows for me to buy it anytime within the next 2 years. That means that if the market goes up in the next 2 years, which it should on all indications, but who knows, I have the right to buy that property at $1 million. So I bought some time in it. If I don't want to buy the property within 2 years, I don't have to. From a seller's point of view, they've locked in a price. They can put terms in the contract that can give them some certainty around the option being exercised. But if it doesn't happen, they will get perhaps an option fee, which is an amount that they'll get, and it will come off the purchase price in 2 years. So the option fee may be $20,000, and if the buyer doesn't exercise the option, the seller still keeps the $20,000. So it's a win-win. Another strategy that's popular in a market like this is a lease option or a rent to own. So that's great for buyers and sellers alike. I may have a property that I want to sell, but I want $1 million for it as a seller, and maybe that is overpriced, or I'd be lucky to get that in a down market where everybody's fearful and uncertain. So my options are I can keep the property, but I didn't want to keep it. I wanted to sell it, and I don't want the hassle of tenants and maintenance. What I could do potentially is rent it to someone on a lease option, with the view to them actually buying it. Now, that's great for first home buyers or people who can't buy their next property, because what it means is that they can rent it in order to own it. So what they're in effect doing is paying principal and interest, and there is an option that they can exercise at some point in the future to actually buy the property. They're building equity into the property, and some lenders will recognize that as showing that they can pay a mortgage, and at some stage in the future they'll get a loan. So we're all leaning into the future, but buying time until we navigate through this market. Great for a seller because they've effectively found someone who wants to buy the property. They've locked in a price at some stage in the future, and they're getting rental income plus chipping away at that purchase price that they've agreed on with the buyer. And the buyer is able to get into a property and home ownership without having to go to the bank and get a loan. Another strategy popular in this market is a joint venture arrangement. So sometimes a seller wants to sell the property, but they can't get it to market. Maybe they just don't like open for inspections. They don't want to style it or get it ready or renovate or do what has to be done. But you may be more creative in property. You may be able to add value through a renovation or get a DA through council. And what can happen then is you partner with a homeowner to manufacture or add, just by your own sweat, some equity or further equity or value in the property. So maybe the property's worth $800,000 as it is, but if I added another bedroom and bathroom or did a cosmetic renovation, it would be worth over $1 million. And maybe it would only cost me, you know, $30,000 to do that. So what I could do is partner with you as the homeowner. So the homeowner puts in the unrenovated or underdeveloped property, and the joint venturer pays the costs or does the work or has the know-how to add value to that property. And then it is sold as a different product for a profit, and there's some sort of profit share arrangement. The owner is putting the property in the mix, and the buyer or co-venturer is putting their expertise and the money potentially to add value to the property. So there are a lot of ways to structure a property deal for a win-win with buyer and seller in this market through creative structuring of deals. And in a market that's turning, sellers are going to be more motivated to do these sorts of out-of-the-box property deals. And it will suit buyers as well who were previously shut out of the market. So there's definitely more than one way to skin a cat, and there's a whole world of possibilities when you look at ways to structure a property deal or acquisition in a down market. If you're enjoying this podcast, we want to invite you to join the Property Lovers Facebook group. To find the group in Facebook, just search for Property Lovers. You'll see the group banner, which has the word Property Lovers Hub on it. It's a community for property lovers in Australia. And just like this podcast, it's been created to give you a competitive advantage so you can get superior results in property. Please come and join us today. That's it for today, but really looking forward to giving you more tools, more strategies, more support, and a competitive advantage when it comes to property in our next episode.